Good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 27th of August. I'll make sure to get the date right. Ticked off a lot of people yesterday on the date. So you know what happened?
What happened?
Well, my computer, I always thought that they were kind of, see, my computer says 9:10 p.m. So the date was moving forward, do you know, and I would look down. So that was my screw up, and I apologize. And I'll correct it at some point as soon as I learn how to correct it.
Joe, how could you make that
terrible error? Because I had it right there in front of me, and well, a lot of letters. More so, people were more worried about that than they were about Syria. But anyway, we are going to talk about lots of issues this morning, and we have a wonderful panel to do so. Alan Chartok is here. The Hunger Action Network's Mark Dunlay joining us for the first time. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Glad to be on.
It is wonderful to have you with us. And our good friend, Rosemary Armeo, who is back.
Thanks to God.
How are you?
Hello, I'm good.
You made quite a rumble yesterday. It was very nice to have you back today.
Everybody was talking about you.
Wow. Well, it's all very serious stuff today. I don't think I'm going to be causing any rumbling. Well, Syrian. Farm bills and debt ceilings, and oh my God.
We were talking about death yesterday.
Oh yeah, death. That's right. Okay, I guess that was serious too.
Yeah, we had serious stuff yesterday.
Why are we talking about Miley Cyrus, you know? We could have some.
Papers are full with it.
Yeah, it is. What were they thinking?
Okay, well, maybe you have to do this off the air, but I still don't know what twerking is. I looked on the video and everything. Everybody's talking about Miley Cyrus twerking. I am an old person. I have no idea what that is.
I think
we'll talk later.
We'll talk later. Exactly. Let us.
And when Joe will tell you the facts of life.
Yes.
It's about time.
let's just say it's a simulation.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Remember that, says Alan.
I saw it in the paper, now I remember.
Okay. All right, let us talk about the big issue, and of course we just heard this from the BBC, and it is very serious news coming out of Syria. The big question seems to be now as to whether military action will come sometime soon by the United States. Chuck Hagel has said, our Secretary of Defense has said that it could come at any time, that we're ready. The Secretary of State, John Kerry, spoke yesterday. And so we look at the situation as very dire and one where we don't quite know what's going to come next.
Yeah, the scene in the New York Times, which they painted on sick and dying people coming into hospitals outside of Damascus, is just horrifying. We keep saying,
never again.
And then here we are, Rwanda, Cambodia, Bosnia, and now it's happening in Syria. It's really distressing.
The question, of course, is what is our role? In other words, we're being told that going to the United Nations right now looks hopeless. I don't like that. You know, in other words, we've got China, we've got Russia. You know, they're with us hot. At least Russia certainly is. And they're allies. And, you know, so going to the United Nations means nothing because we'll get a veto.
Yeah, there.
So now the world's policeman, that's us, steps up and we have to do the right thing to protect people who need protection. As I have said on this show and in other places, maybe I'm just naive about this. Every time they took a poll in Iraq, the people said, get out. You know, I mean,
right.
What is it that gives us the go ahead to go in?
The specter of 100,000 lost lives.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that does require us to go in, of course, is to get a congressional resolution under the War Powers Act. And I don't believe that President Obama has done that yet. And while clearly Russia supports Syria because Syria buys so much weapons from them, at the same time, Russia is pretty conservative in that they're concerned that intervention in Syria could bring forces to power that are actually worse than the present government. That's not a good situation for the United States.
Sure, you're right. They've had that exact problem in the past.
Right.
When some of these guys, Afghanistan, for example,
Egypt, Tunisia, it's happening all over. Turned out not to be
great friends of theirs.
Like Al-Qaeda has a fair, strong presence there, and you have Saudi Arabia, and you have some of the oil Gulf states that are financing the opposition. And, you know, why would we be fighting Al-Qaeda in Pakistan and Afghanistan and then try to help them get into power into Syria? The question is, how do you get a ceasefire where you get Russia and China to stop arming Syria? And how do you get the United States to convince Saudi Arabia and Turkey to stop, you know, arming the opposition and go in there? Because military strike is just going to make the situation work. It doesn't lead to peace.
You get a backdoor deal. I was mentioning before that the idea of the Cuban Missile Crisis, in which the United States made a deal. Nobody knew about it for years, which were the Turkish missiles in Turkey aimed at the old Soviet Union taken out. But of course, the deal was nobody said anything, you know, about that. So, you know, again, democracy counts on people knowing something about what's happening. And if you pull the wool over their eyes, it's very tough.
We obviously spoke about this yesterday as to the politics of it for the president and for those of us in this country. And with John Kerry making his remarks yesterday and saying that it was undeniable that there was a use of chemical weapons in Syria, and using some of the strongest language to date, it seems as though the case was starting to be made in the Right. The footwork was moving
for
in that
action
direction.
Action coming, you mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Does that? I guess is there a playbook for that kind of thing? Do you think, Alan?
I don't know. We have certainly a playbook. Whether the playbook has been effective in the past,
whether it works,
is the question. I mean, the Bushes knew all about it. I just know it's going to happen. Of that, there is no doubt right now. The only question is what.
So limited military operation, according to officials. Cruise missiles launched from American destroyers in the Mediterranean Sea at military targets in Syria, and not a sustained air campaign intended to topple the Syrian president or to fundamentally alter the nature of the conflict on the ground.
That means they've got a real problem. McCain yesterday came out and said, we got to do something, and not just a bunch of cruise missiles sent their way, unquote.
Well, and also one of the problems with any of these missile attacks, whether it's a military target or it's chemical factories, they tend to be located close to civilian populations, so you're going to get civilian casualties.
Right.
And that just escalates the attack, and it probably, you know, gives more power to Assad, because now he can play the nationalist card. I'm being attacked by the United States. I'm surrounded by Israel. This is all about imperialistic politics. Rally behind me, even though you may not like me.
And I'm the best alternative. Yeah, exactly. Right. You're right.
I don't think he is right. And I don't think you're
right
either.
You don't think Mark is right?
No. And I don't think you're right either. I mean, I think these lines have been drawn so solidly now that, you know, while you can say he can play the nationalism card, he's been trying to do that all along, I don't think it buys him anything. I think he's got a civil war over there. And we got a problem because we don't have a player to be for. I mean, we just don't have a player to be for, and we know it.
And civil wars, unfortunately, don't get resolved through outside military intervention, especially a limited air attack. And so we're just going to escalate. We're not going to bring peace on the ground. That's the problem. It's not, you know, it's not a question whether Assad needs to go, whether Assad's a bad player. I think that's clear he is. The question is, how do you try to basically get him off the stage and escalating through military attacks? History does not prove that to be very effective.
So how about
first,
the guys on the
first
other?
Of all, yeah. Outside military intervention does affect civil wars, including our own. We could not have won had there not been the intervention of the French, for example, in our own civil war. It's certainly true in the Bosnian. If you call it a civil war, it was more complicated than that. And what's happening in Syria will be affected, as it was in Libya. And there's two parts to this which we keep conflating here. One is civilians are being targeted. If you're dropping chemical weapons in places where people are dying by the hundreds or the thousands, as it seems to indicate right now, then somebody has to act. And Russia is not going to cause a war with us because we're stopping civilians from dying. What happens next is definitely complicated. It brings in all the things you guys are talking about.
Like, how are you so sure what Russia's going to do?
There's just no, what would be the value to them to say, oh, we think that they should have been, Assad should have been allowed to kill his people with chemical weapons.
I don't think that's
how does that play in his own audience or any place in the world?
That is not what they're going to say. You know, I mean,
they're going to say he didn't use chemical weapons.
No,
which
they're
going to
say the United States is a bully. The United States is an intervener. And Putin is going to do what he's doing all along, saying we're independent players and this is a good chance to prove it.
That we didn't get involved.
And are we sure the Syrian opposition has not used chemical weapons at any point?
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that I don't care who's using them. They should not be used in civilians.
But then why do you go after one side? If Mark is right, then why do you go after one side?
I don't think I said to go after one side. If you're directing missiles at military installations and chemical-producing plants, you're stopping chemical attacks.
Now, I don't want to give you a hard time, Rosemary, because
yes,
I do love you. But let me ask you this. So what would you do if you suspect that both sides have used chemical weapons? Will you start sending missiles to both sides?
Oh, I'm not sure.
At both sides?
Where do you send the missile to the rebel side? Do they have, I mean, you're identifying.
Well, they have places that they're in charge of, sure.
Not places, towns. I'm talking about absolute targets that are causing the current havoc.
What if Mark's right?
Military
what if it's the other guys who are doing it?
Well, if you're targeting chemical factories, chemical-making factories, you're going to get them all. Yes, get them all.
Except you can also import chemical weapons from other outside places.
Yeah, yes, and it also isn't just the Russians who are sending weapons into that area, too. The Americans have made a lot of money selling arms into that whole area, and so we hold a blame for it, too.
So I just want to gear the conversation to one thing that Alan mentioned and then just go a little bit and just then make the next step, which the UN here and seeming that we're not going to be able to get anything meaningful from the UN in this and B, okay, so where does that leave the United States and allies as they try to pull this all together?
It leaves us just where we were with
Iraq. Exactly.
We're going to do what we want to do.
Or Libya.
And it doesn't. I think we should have learned a lesson here. And I think that Obama's in an impossible situation. Politically, he's in an impossible situation. Militarily, he's in an impossible situation. What side, the American people have got to be confused about this. They know he got us out of Afghanistan finally, or is getting us out of Afghanistan finally, not counting the CIA and the rest, the guys who are still there.
These things don't happen overnight. At what point did we have, do you think, and I throw this out to the entire panel, but at what point do you think we had a opportunity, one, and two, an obligation to do something and start to deal with this?
Well, I think, part of the problem is always that these type of situations develop over decades. And too often we, the United States, as do other countries, make short-term pragmatic political decisions to advance, our interests and don't worry about what the consequences are going to be 10, 15, 20 years down the line. And then it's like, okay, now the truck's about to fall over the cliff. How do you stop the truck? And you're too late to do that.
I just want to say one word, Osama.
Bin Laden?
Yes.
What about him?
Well, he was on the side we were supporting, if you may remember. And that is what we're worried about with some of these characters. And we say, well, it's for democracy. Oh, yeah? Well, there is a certain amount of indication that some of the guys on the other side are interested in anything but democracy. They're interested in grabbing power, but then, then they'll do what they want. And I think that's what got the Egyptian generals so annoyed, because they saw that their stuff was, that they were going to get killed.
So it's also, this area is not just Syria that's involved too. It has developed over decades. And so where's Saudi Arabia in all of this? Usually they're affected by this.
Well, Iran is back in Syria.
Iran, absolutely.
And we overthrew the democratically elected government in Iran because they were trying to nationalize oil resources. And that led to the Shah, which then led to Khomeini.
Right.
And that's, creates this whole long-term problem.
Yep.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will wrap up this conversation, and then we'll take a news break to find out what's happening around the world, and then we'll be back with other issues. And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Behan Communications, corporate communications, public affairs, and crisis communications for 25 years, serving clients throughout the Northeast. BehanCommunications.com. Menla Center for Health and Happiness and Mahasuka Spa, Phoenicia, presenting educational retreats for mind and body, such as The Art of Happiness with Howard Cutler, September 20th through 22nd, MenlaMountain.org. And Sunwood Builders, Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features, sunwood-builders.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion this morning. Mark Dunlay is here, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and we welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Hey, Joe, Barbara Weinstein checked in.
Yes.
And she said, twerking. Actually, the definition is readily available on the internet. I know because I needed to look it up also after reading that was technically what Miley was doing.
Miley Cyrus on the VMAs.
Also, twerking is trending on my Yahoo homepage, so I just clicked on it. Basically, it's dirty dancing plus that up and down jiggly thing girls and boys do with their butts. The term was coined, as I've read, by some songs, and it's basically the dance used in strip clubs.
My. Okay, so my next question is, why is it bad when Miley does it and it's great when Beyonce does it in the Super Bowl? Okay.
Well,
now let's get back to Siri.
Did you see the thing?
Both of them. I've seen both of them.
You didn't think that was a little bit?
I thought it was terrible, but I did with Beyonce as well.
Okay.
You can't say, as my mother always did, that they're all doing it. I mean, you know, it's not that if one did it, you know.
I think they all should be banned. I think we should ship all these women to Siri and just.
There you go. We'll get on that during the break. We'll start the paperwork. How does that sound? We welcome your input on twerking or even Syria and more important issues. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So prognosticating a little bit, where do you think we're looking at some sort of action taking place, you know, within hours or within days or within weeks?
What do you think, Mark?
I think within the week, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen soon.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
And then we think of okay, but then what's the long-term effect? You know, what happens? You know, are we in this for the long haul, a short term? Obviously, the president is trying to give every indication that it will be brief, you don't always get what you want.
We are just so bad at this. I mean, Libya. We did the same thing, and Afghanistan, and Iraq, and that's just over the past few years. And here's one more country. And
is it possible that what we're doing is trying to? We know that we don't have a side, to be honest.
Right.
And so what we're trying to do is just keep things destabilized.
Destabilize, or is it what I'm trying to do here? It's like, can we just save some lives while you politicians try to figure this out?
Well, you keep talking about that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I think that might be part of it.
Really?
What's the advantage to us to keep it destabilized?
Well, I know if one of these two sides wins, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
So therefore, the more we can keep the status quo. You know, I'm not suggesting that. This is not Alan's.
No,
bucket.
I understand.
I'm just trying to delve into the inner sanctum of the mind.
And of course, you know, does it escalate? I mean, Israel, for instance, already did attack some of the chemical factories in Syria. If they see a widening escalation in Syria, do they say, well, this is maybe an opportunity for us to take a few more shots at some targets we want to do? And then somebody else's response, Iran, and then suddenly it becomes uncontrollable.
Well, if you listen to the NPR thing this morning, analysis this morning, they said Israel was in good shape for the last 40 years because everybody, you know, on the Golan and everybody understood nobody was going anywhere. Nobody was moving. They were in great shape. And this isn't good for them.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel, and we welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. This breaking news just in, Energy Corporation says it will decommission Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Station by the end of 2014. The owner of Vermont Yankee says it will shutter the plant at the end of its current fuel cycle. A gradual shutdown that will see Vermont Yankee offline by the end of 2014. Energy Corporation says the closing the Vernon plant was an agonizing decision. The future of Vermont Yankee has been contested for years as activists and some lawmakers called for its closure. The company says the decision is based on several financial factors, including a booming natural gas market and increased expenses of the plant. And, of course, we'll have more in the story coming up on Midday Magazine. So.
Very interesting.
Fascinating story that is developing out of, yes, absolutely. It seems in my however many years here, it's that was the story we've always been working on, isn't
yeah,
it? For my Yankee.
So
the ongoing story, the numbers are in the Rolodex. So we'll have more on that coming up at noon today. Again, we always welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We've been talking a lot about Syria, of course, this morning. We do want to move on to some other issues. And one of them, again, making news is the debt ceiling article in the New York Times this morning that says unless Congress raises the debt ceiling, the Treasury Department said on Monday that it expected to lose the ability to pay all of the government's bills in mid-October. That means that Congress will face two major budget deadlines only 2 weeks apart since the stopgap continuing resolution that finances the federal government runs out at the end of September. We also, and one of the reasons Mark is here, is to talk about the farm bill also running out at the in September. And we're very close, and a lot of work needs to be done. And the question is, well, you know, it stays like this when we have conversations. Is anything going right? You know,
or does the Republican Party want to commit suicide? That seems to me to be one of the issues. I'll tell you, our congressman around here, Democrats and Republicans are furious about the farm bill going down. And it really comes out to be regionalism, the Midwest, the agribusiness versus the local farmers, farm community. And, of course, the Republican insistence that on the SNAP program that you're going to talk about, Mark, that which is a disgrace. That our people can't feed our population, that people aren't entitled to a baseline of our children are not entitled to eat. I mean, it's more than I can stand.
Well, it's not just Midwest farmers versus local farmers. It's also Southern farmers.
Sure.
And when they did the fiscal cliff extension last December, New Year's Eve, they brought in Biden for the Democrats, and they brought in Mitch McConnell as the Republican Senate Minority Leader. It had nothing to do with the Farm Bill at that point. And McConnell's from Kentucky. And so he flipped the Farm Bill literally overnight to shift what the agreement had been to support the Southern farmers, so put the money into the rice, the cotton, and the peanuts. And a lot of the Senate Republicans believe that the Farm Bill cost them the United States Senate. And senators have to represent the entire state, whereas the House represents much smaller district, and so they tend to be more ideologically driven. And so the Senate Republicans have gone to the House Republicans, you're killing us. And, you know, get this issue off the table. And I think a lot of people were very surprised that, you know, the House actually voted down the Farm Bill, which shocked the Washington political establishment. And that was because the anti-hunger community across the country, you know, really mobilized against the $20 billion cuts that the House wanted to pass. The House response was, well, let's pull the Farm Bill apart, take out SNAP or food stamps, and let's double down and now do $40 billion worth of cuts. But what is interesting is that some of the most conservative Republicans actually represent districts with the highest rate of participation in the food stamp program in the country. And so there's a lot of infighting as well among the Republican Party.
That's fascinating. Were you surprised by it? You said the Washington elite, the political establishment,
you
was
know, I was surprised that we were able to defeat it, but later that day, I was on a national conference call with the Food Research Action Center, mm-hmm. which is the national main anti-hunger group. They said they had the vote down to one. They were only off by one, so they knew exactly what was occurring. And a lot of the media said that the cuts that had been added at the last moment, particularly to put some additional work requirements into the food stamp program, was what finally caused the enough House Democrats said that's it. Wow. And the anti-hunger group said, no, we already had the votes before they put in that last amendment
mm-hmm.
that – and the polls overwhelmingly show 70% of the American people are opposed to this. They want higher food stamp benefits, not less food stamp benefits. And we have the situation where the House Republicans are astounded, like Inspector Claude in Casablanca, that when unemployment is high, that for some reason the cost of the food stamp program goes up because
yeah.
more people are getting food stamps. And their solution is not to reduce unemployment through a job creation program, is to slash
food
benefits.
Stamps, yeah.
Well, a couple of things. Well, number one, Mark, when you say all of us who study legislative politics, including you, I know that when they get it down to one vote, that's because they've let a whole bunch of people off the hook. But that one vote still means that you win or lose. We see it in the legislature here all the time. We see it in the Congress all the time. And you're quite right. If you come from a district where you have a lot of people on SNAP, and you're gonna lose if you vote wrong on this, they're gonna let you off the hook as long as they can count votes, which they do. Which is why so many of these things become so close. The other thing I wanted to mention is, McConnell, of course, has a terrible primary of his own, in which the opposition is trying to out-conservative him.
Yes.
And even though, if you take a look at the sort of politics of SNAP and the good that it does and all the rest, if he has to go into a primary and defend feeding children with some of those characters, he loses.
Well, we also saw that here in New York. Sure. Many of us were very shocked that Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, generally a liberal Democrat, just got elected to the Lower Hudson Valley, one of the only Democrat on the House Agriculture Committee from New York. He actually voted in the Agriculture Committee for the cuts to the SNAP program. And that is because he is so scared that he's going to face again Hayworth,
yeah.
Who's a Tea Partier, and he just said, I wanted to take this issue off the table.
Do you find that disgusting?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And I had a similar argument with John Hall, who was a friend of mine, who is also, more moderate on certain issues. And he was like, I just got to get through two election cycles, and then I can go and do what I want.
Which he didn't do anyway.
He didn't do, and so now your legacy is that you took positions you didn't agree with because you were playing short-term pragmatic politics. You never know what's going to happen in politics. If you vote your conscience, at least you sleep better at night.
I agree with you, and I think people respect it. Yeah.
What's your prediction, Mark, when you're looking at all of this? Do you have – he's shaking his head.
Do we get a farm bill?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of talk now we're going to do a year extension. I thought what could occur is, the Senate did pass a farm bill and the House passed a farm bill without SNAP in it. But they could have done a joint conference committee. If they wanted a farm bill, they could go to a joint conference committee, have the Senate negotiate with the House leadership, get a bill that the House Democrats will vote for. And if you can get the House Republican leadership to allow the bill to come up to a vote, you can pass it. The question is, what under what circumstances would they allow that to occur? They would at least, I assume, want half the Republicans to vote in favor of it, and that may be difficult.
Yeah, good luck, Charlie. That's a big if.
That is a big if. Of course, the farmers are very upset. We talk a lot about SNAP, as we should, but the Farm Bill is a very comprehensive document. It's the single largest source of funding, for instance, for conservation programs. So that's a big concern, and it's what drives, it's how we shape our food policy system. And so farmers are very dependent on the Farm Bill, and they're not harmed that much by the extensions, but it makes it difficult to plan, and they want it done. No one is happy, other than perhaps a few House Republicans, that we're in this limbo, and so the pressure continues to build. Yeah. How do you get them to compromise?
So let me ask you a question that I've never quite understood. It's always seemed to me that SNAP has to help farmers because we feed a lot of people. That's a lot of food. When I raise that with politicians, Congressional Corner, other places, they seem slow to come to that. Am I just mistaken?
No, I think the politicians are mistaken. We have worked very closely with the New York State Farm Bureau, and we did a joint letter with them to Senator Gillibrand. It's been very good on the farm bill issue, and they were very supportive of raising food stamp benefits.
But for what reason? In other words,
because they get more people to buy food. It helps them.
It's always seen that way to me.
But, right.
But every congressman that I talk to on the Congressional Corner always says this isn't about Republican and Democratic politics. This is about regions competing with each other. Is that wrong?
That is definitely partially true. Of course, the whole idea behind the Farm Bill initially was this coalition between the urban centers, which they feel would, you know, let's get the hungry people, and then the rural areas, which let's get the farmers. But there's a real split between farmers, because small family farms, medium-sized family farms, are not really helped by the Farm Bill. I think the average farmer is getting like under $600. As they say, We get enough money under the Farm Bill to buy, you know, a set of tires for my tractor. Down the hill from me, the corporate-owned farm, the agribusiness, they're getting enough money to buy out the neighboring farmer. And so the money in the Farm Bill is really loaded to the particularly large agribusiness, and there's a lot of opposition even among conservative Republicans to that. But that's where you get into fight. And then you get this whole fight between the southern farmers, who are the rice and the cotton, and then the Midwest farmers, who are the
corn and the wheat and the corn. Yeah.
And the agreement was this year, because the commodity prices are at record highs, that we were going to get rid of the direct commodity prices and then go into an expanded farm insurance program, which has its own controversy. And one of the things that Senator Gillibrand did, she put on the floor of the Senate an amendment to just cap the profit of the 10 largest insurance companies. Because we as taxpayers we're taking the risk. But just cap their profits, not eliminate the profits, cap the profits, and use the profits to offset the cuts that the Senate had included in the SNAP program, $4 billion over 10 years. And that bill went down over 2-1, which meant a lot of Democrats voted against it.
Insurance companies all have lobbyists on K Street that come up to talk to them.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, it's money talks. But the New York Farm Bureau, you know, supports a lot of changes. They want to see changes in dairy farming. That's big in New York State. Sure. The crop insurance, one of the things that they would like, New York farms are very different than farms in the Midwest, and we're much more diversified. And the crop insurance that we have designed out of the Farm Bill really kind of favors monocrops, growing one crop, large factory farms. It doesn't deal with the reality of the farm situation we have in New York State. So they want to see, you know, changes to reflect that. And actually, somewhat to my surprise, the Farm Bureau has been very good on trying to help organic farmers. They don't support legislation to require farmers to be more organic like we do some pesticides. But if a farmer decides that he or she wants to be organic, they want to help them be successful.
But why do you think that's so surprising? If in fact, it's the organic piece of this is so small.
Well, it's just that, you know, my experience with the Farm Bill over the years from the environmental community had been that they were not particularly supportive in some of the legislation around, you know, pesticides.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it makes sense once you think about it. But we wrote, a joint letter, and they had some very strong organic measures in there that the New York State. I understand the New York State Farm Bureau, because our farm system is different, is probably one of the more progressive farm bureaus in the country. But they've been pretty good.
I have a really simple question. Do I have time to get it in?
Yes.
I'm confused about this also with the debt ceiling issue, too, that we might talk about, which is, what does it really look like if we don't have a Farm Bill? If they don't come together, if they can't get their act together, what are the real consequences? The same as if we fell over the cliff and we had sequester,
right.
And yes, there have been consequences, I am aware of it, but there's not disaster.
Yet.
Right, which had been predicted. What happens? happens if there's no farm bill?
Oh, that's a very good question with a complicated answer. Okay. The food stamp program, SNAP, is a permanent program. It is actually exempted from sequestration. So for a certain extent, the anti-hunger groups have been saying, do nothing, because we survive under a do-nothing scenario. If the farm bill is not reauthorized, we actually revert under the law to the first farm bill. And that has some very antiquated rules with respect to dairy pricing and other farm pricing. So you might see the price of milk triple or quadruple if we don't do that. And then, for instance, in the last farm bill, there were a number of small reforms that were passed, $5 million here, $10 million here. They were very important. Things like trying to expand farmers' market, things about helping beginning farmers. A lot of young farmers, actually Congressman Gibson, who represents this congressional district, has been very good on beginning farmers because there's a very strong contingent down in the Hudson Valley. So a lot of programs would fall off the table. SNAP would continue ahead, but the general farm pricing system would explode.
So farmers would be the ones most hurt by this.
And consumers, because you're paying three times
as much for
your milk. We have a few minutes left. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we have a couple letters I want to get to and wrap up our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, helping to bring nature closer with Eagle Optics, Vortex, and Nikon binoculars and spotting scopes. 518-226-0071. Glens Falls Hospital, serving six counties in the southern Adirondacks in 28 locations. Big City Medicine, Hometown Care, Twitter, Facebook, and glensfallshospital.org. And historic Hyde Park, New York, presenting the newly renovated Franklin D. Roosevelt Presidential Library with immersive museum exhibits. Open daily 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. historichydepark.org.
Welcome back to the roundtable. We have a few minutes left and want to wrap up our discussion. We have some letters that I want to get to. This one from Richard, who says, the Congress should do away with food stamps by ensuring working families can earn a living wage and reserve them for those out of work or disabled people. Mark, your thoughts.
Well, I think it would be great if Congress would create a public works program like we did during the Depression with FDR, used to be governor of New York, and guarantee a living wage job to everybody who can't get it to a private sector. Better than this workfare that the House Republicans are talking about. The reality is, however, that half the people on food stamps now are employed. And the problem is that they're making poverty-level wages, which is particularly true since the end of the 2007 Great Depression. So, yes, raising the minimum wage to a livable level so you don't need to rely upon food stamps would be good. But most people on food stamps actually have a job.
I would answer the question just a little bit differently and shorter, which is, it's easy for you to say. In other words, if we're talking about some minimal money for food stamps, sure. But in fact, this is what we have, what we're faced with.
We got this letter from Ron going back to our discussion in about Syria, saying, I find it hard to believe that Assad would poison his people when he is winning the war there. And 20 weapons inspectors just arrived in Damascus. Show us the proof, especially when the rebels have always been caught using sarin gas on the people of Syria. How many more countries are we going to turn into a hellhole and kill thousands of its people?
Well, let's see the proof. Well, I don't think he's winning the war.
Well, I think the writer raises a good point. I mean, show us the proof. We learned the last time that if we don't see the proof, it can be baloney. And as somebody said yesterday, maybe it was Rosemary, the only one who wins is Halliburton.
I didn't, but it was Libby who said it, I agree with her. Yeah. I don't know. What proof are we looking for?
We're looking for proof that the one side used it, not the other side.
And not the other. And does that change what we do?
Well, if both sides used it, would you want to bomb
this? You're saying the results are the same.
Yeah, I don't want kids to die. That's it.
Right.
I want that to stop.
Who would disagree with you?
I mean, you say that so glibly, and yet we all stood by while a million people died in Rwanda.
Yeah, okay.
And
if
we could have stopped easily. There was
And if we, Rosemary, if we start sending missiles into places. Are you sure that there is kids aren't going to die and there's not going to be collateral damage?
No, of course not.
Right. I would focus more on trying to create a ceasefire, which I know is going to be difficult,
right,
as opposed to sending bombs.
I want to, while you're here, Mark, and before we go, and we only have about a minute and a half left, but, I mean, Rosemary asked this question, you know, so what happens? And so right now, as time's ticking, I know your organization has been working. So what is the hope? What is the plan for the next couple of weeks?
Well, the farm bill expires technically at the end of September. Particularly the House has to come back and deal with it. We hope to go to a joint conference committee. They could resolve it. They could give a 3-month extension. They could give a year extension. The United States Senate said they're not going to do an extension. But they may be changing their mind. But we need people to call their congressmen and their senators right now and say, we want a farm bill. We want a farm bill that continues to help, you know, with the SNAP program. But we also want a farm bill that helps farmers. And we want a farm bill that promotes healthy food. And we want a farm bill that protects our water supply. The biggest source of water pollution in the United States right now is runoff from fertilizers, pesticides, and animal waste. And the farm bill is the major source of federal funding to deal with that. And that's in jeopardy. And it's under attack, actually, the conservation funding.
I want to thank our panel this morning, and a programming note coming up at 11 o'clock this morning. We will be airing a NPR debate on Syria. They have several former members of the Defense Department, State Department, as well as Homeland Security. They will be talking about this issue, and we will be running that from 11 to 12 this morning.
I'm assigning myself to that.
Yes, it's a fascinating conversation. We'll be talking about that and airing that coming up in 1 hour from now. In the meantime, my thanks to Rosemary and Mark. Thank you so much. Always
thank
a pleasure
you
to be here. Alan, we'll do it again tomorrow.
I'll be here.
Thank you very much.
I
also,
think.
You never know, do you?
No, you don't.
Congressional Corner coming up in 45 minutes as well. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.